Okay, good morning. Continuing with our 21st century halachic topics. So this scandal broke, I think, March 2019, almost a year ago, where it was discovered, I should say, that the number of high-profile personalities and celebrities had been, in fact, cheating to get their kids into college, right? The college admissions bribery scandal. One of the schools was USC. So it turns out when the story broke, I was actually in Southern California, so it was a little of a buzz in the local media around there. So let's go for, again, this is the sources from Rabbi Asher Bush. Let's start with figuring out why exactly it's so bad. Why is it a problem? Why paying bribes to get your kid into college is a crime? So this was written in the New York Times. Peter J. Henning. All parents want their children to go to the best college possible, but paying bribes to have them admitted to elite schools as athletes or having someone provide the answers for their standardized test clearly crosses the boundary into unacceptable conduct. On Tuesday, federal prosecutors in Boston charged 33 parents and 13 coaches with engaging in a long-running scheme to get children to colleges by gaming the admissions process. Among those caught up in the case are, okay, we'll skip all these people, famous people. But how is paying bribes or submitting falsified test scores to get a child into a private college like Georgetown or USC, where my parents met, just throwing it out there. my parents earned their way into USC. Mail and wire fraud statutes identify a scheme to defraud, including, quote, right of honest services. Right, the right of honest services. That turns the dishonesty of getting your child admitted into their college of choice into a crime that's punished up to 20 years in prison. The honest services law has been a means to police corporate or official dishonesty without requiring proof of a benefit to the defendant. But in 2010, the Supreme Court, right, in the appeal of the former Enron, right, remember that scandal with the Enron when they're telling everybody to buy into the company, and meanwhile the high-end they're all dropping their stocks, they're getting out, right? If a university coach or employee takes a payment in exchange for improperly admitting a student who's not otherwise qualified, it can be a federal crime because it violates the honest services owed to the school. For the parents charged in the case, paying the bribe means that they're just as guilty for acting as an accomplice in the fraudulent scheme. How do people go off the rails so easily by engaging in clearly dishonest conduct? In other words, if you would stop and ask any parent or any person, is this right? Of course not. Right? Be it, and they had the interviews where the parents and those who were involved in it like really had very little remorse, if any. It was just seen as like, this is what I have to do.
How about on the child's part?
So it turns out in this particular scandal, it's interesting, not all the kids knew what the parents were doing.
But the ones that were on the show.
Okay. Inach Nami, right. The kids who did know, but not every, I think if I understood correctly, not every child realized what their parent was doing, in fact, to get them in. The criminal complaint is replete with the changes that show the parents had little regard for the possible criminality of what they were doing. Mr. Kaplan was quoted as telling a corporate witness case, quote, I'm not worried about the moral issue here. I'm worried about the, if she's caught doing that, you know she's finished. Right? Stop. You see how that's the antithesis of Yiddishkeit. I don't care about the morals.
It's not cheating until you get caught.
It's not cheating until you get caught, right? Nah, that's all I want, because I'll really mess up my kid if they get caught doing this. But if they don't get caught, it's them to hate. Right? Another parent charged in the case, Jane Buckingham's quote, is telling a confidential informant, quote, I know this is craziness. I know it is. And then I need you to get him into USC, and I need you to cure cancer and make peace in the Middle East. Ms. Buckingham paid $50,000 to have someone else take the ACT exam for her son. So we were talking about this last week in shul. Bruce Titan says, things have gone up because someone only offered me $1,000 to take the exam for their kid. Bruce Titan, he said I was only offered $1,000.
No, he said he was even left for him. His brother was offered $1,000.
Oh, his brother. It wasn't him, it was his brother. His brother was offered $1,000.
Sibling discount.
So, no, it wasn't for him. It was some. But you see that how this is it's been there. It's always been. So if you're gonna tell me that cheating has always been part of the system, it's not in the sources for this morning, but I think in previous times we've discussed the famous tshuva from Ramosha about, are you allowed to cheat on the regents? So Moshe says, of course you cannot cheat on the regents. Once you've made that decision, and whatever the heterim are to, quote-unquote, attend and take secular subjects, okay, you're taking general studies, you have to do your best. He writes many reasons. I believe we've done this in previous years. It's Gnevis Das, because you got somebody to take your exams, or you cheated, whatever it was, and now you're presenting yourself as this, I got a perfect score on my SATs, or this is my LSATs, or my whatever it was. And now a potential employer comes and says, well, I'm hiring somebody based upon this score because I think that they're capable of doing this amount of work. So it's stealing. He says, of course you can't do it. And he writes it, that it creates an attitude of laziness and not dedicate yourself to learning. So we understand the criminal and the moral and the halachic problems with falsely presenting work for that. So he has here much more to what the legal things are. But they touched upon, I remember a lot of the stories were debating, you know, in terms of when it comes to colleges, they have like a legacy. You know what the legacy is, right? That if you have a brother or a father or an uncle or somebody who's gone to whatever particular university it is, Mustama, you're getting into that university as well, right? There's, so to speak, you're, and maybe you're not as qualified. Maybe your parents or you, whoever it was who went there, that's one way of, so to speak, well, not calling it a backdoor, but it was understood that was a particular preferential treatment were given to applicants.
But that's the school's choice to be.
That's the school's choice, right. What's the other way besides? For the regular way is just applying and getting in based upon pure merits. The second way is if you had a brother or cousin or da-da-da who went to the Indian. What's the third way of getting into a university?
There's two other ways.
Yeah. Your father donated to a museum, a building, a wing, right? I don't know what the actual numbers were, the donation were that Jared Kushner...
$5 million.
To how much did he pay?
I think it was $5 million.
Millions of dollars, and he went to Harvard. A fresh graduate. Many of my chaverim remember him. They said he was a normal kid. Jared Kushner said he was a normal kid, liked to play a lot of basketball, just a regular, normal, good kid. Okay. Went to Harvard. Fine. Let's move on a little bit. Interesting stuff in here that talks about what the what all these crimes were, but this is from the New York Times. At the bottom of the next page, the three charges, three crimes. Number one is mail fraud, honest services fraud, and money laundering. This charge was later added to many defendants who were unwilling to plead guilty. What does this all mean? Mail fraud. The term fraud includes any scheme, one, to obtain money or property under false pretenses. Okay. See. Sell, distribute, exchange, supply, or use counterfeits. That's mail fraud. A person commits mail fraud when the scheme involves the mailing of something associated with the fraud. Mailing contracts, receipts, and communications regarding a fraudulent deal could all meet the law's requirements. The communications are not limited to the USPS, the United States Postal Service, and include mail sent through private and commercial interstate carriers. That's the mail fraud. Okay, that was one. Number two, the honest services fraud is a crime defined in the code, the Federal Mail and Wire Fraud Statute added by the United States Congress in 1988, which states, quote, for the purpose of this chapter, the term scheme or artifice to defraud includes a scheme or artifice to deprive another of the intangible right of honest services. So this touches a little bit on a bigger issue about affirmative action, right? The whole idea behind affirmative action was that certain people, for whatever reasons, had a stronger chance of getting into a university because of opportunities that presented to them that weren't for people of different backgrounds, right? So therefore, they wanted to make this great equalizer, and they're going to have affirmative action. And regardless of whether or not the candidate is actually really qualified, there might be others who have better scores than that. But in order to level the playing field a little bit.
So, but can they call it fraud if it's publicly stated?
No, so that's not.
Publicly stated. I mean,
right, affirmative action is not fraud.
Yeah.
But now, and this was, so where do you draw the line? In other words, where do you say we want to make it equal and we don't want to have people have certain advantages, but here these people were getting certain advantages. So certain legal advantages and certain illegal advantages, right? So a lot of the discussion was that have been. And the last thing we were charged on was the money laundering. I'm going to skip the first paragraph. Tax evasion and false accounting practices constitute common types of money laundering. Often criminals achieve these objectives through the use of shell companies, holding companies, and offshore accounts. A shell company is an incorporated company that possesses no significant assets and doesn't perform any significant operations. To launder money, the shell company purports to perform some service that would reasonably require its customers to often pay with cash. Cash transactions increase the anonymity of the customers and therefore decrease the government's ability to trace the initial recipient of the dirty money. Money launderers commonly select beauty salons and plumbing services as shell companies. The launderer then deposits the money with a shell company, which deposits it into its accounts. The company then creates fake invoices and receipts to account for the cash. Such transactions create the appearance of propriety and clean money. The shell company can then make withdrawals and either return the money to the initial criminal or pass the money on to further shell companies before returning to the further cloud who first deposited the money. Notably missing from the list of charges, the act that seems to be at the heart of the scandal, bribery. The reason it's not included in the charge is that bribery isn't a federal crime if it doesn't involve a government official. Yeah, depends who you're. What's the greasing the wheels, right? Who you giving on? So now we have to look at the halakha. That's the background behind this, but to understand. So a few just key points. We'll get into the actual sources. The article we read in the New York Times. There were many. That's just the one that I wanted to do it. It didn't really relate to the role of wealth or other privilege in the admissions process, right? Is that really fair that a kid who comes from a wealthy background would have a better chance? Again, let's say they're equal. Exact same scores, exact same GPA, exact same extracurricular activities. They both did all these things. They both had the summer internships. They all had the exact same thing. Except one comes from a very wealthy, well-to-do family, and one doesn't. That's one thing, right? So what do you say? Is that unfair to give that kid an advantage? Mm-hmm. Why?
In the Torah perspective, I think it's unfair, but in the real world perspective, maybe it is fair because the college has their own interests. You know, they're looking for parents with money. They're looking to help themselves.
Right.
You know, colleges want to increase their endowments.
Right.
I mean, it has nothing to do with the kid or the educational equivalence of the candidates.
It's more for what the university has to
institutional needs.
I don't know if you could say though, from a Torah perspective, it's not fair because you have the same thing from a Torah perspective. So,
what do you see?
A Talmud Chacham from a son of a Talmud Chacham versus a Talmud Chacham versus a son of an Am Haaretz.
So we also have a hierarchy. A Talmud Chacham comes before an Am Haaretz.
No, right.
Right.
Yeah, but you also
but there's merit based. That's not Talmud Chacham versus Talmud Chacham.
The son who's a Talmud Chacham, who's a son of a Talmud, the same individual.
You have two Talmud, you have two kids who are at the same level of learning.
Yeah.
One of them comes from a Rabbanisha family, and the other one is just his father's a tailor.
Oh, so who's going to get into yeshiva? Yeshiva admissions process.
Right.
All right, good. So that one gets that protects. Good. Okay. We're going to.
You also have the financial part.
What do you mean? That's what Michael said. No,
even the financial part alone, the yeshivas nowadays. Okay,
who can pay tuition?
And they can't afford the tuition or whatever.
Right.
The kid's not getting in.
Uh-huh.
It's not just who the father is as far as a rabbi or not or mm-hmm. whatever. It's the same thing as the secular colleges and stuff.
Oh, so I'm sure.
Bruch
atod ha'melachlam shakol nero. I didn't put it on the source sheets, but there was a LookJet article that went around a while back. There was a school in Canada who was the director of Israeli admissions, was offered $1,000 for every student he would direct to a particular yeshiva, to go unnamed. So the cutthroat competition of Israeli schools as to who's going to get it, they're under such pressure to give the kids a great time early in the year. Early in the year. Because when they start coming to America to start recruiting in around November time, well, they're going to call up their friend who's in that particular yeshiva and say, how's it going over there? And they say, the learning's hard, the food isn't so good, the beds are soft, the beds are hard, whatever it is, whatever it is, they want to hear when the Israelis, the yeshivas want the kids, when they call in to say, how's it going over there? Amazing, everything's fast. So that now, I want to go there. Because it's, and unfortunately, there is a real financial business aspect to it. So obviously it's understood, and no one's aware who that particular alleged yeshiva was that did offer kickbacks to the Israeli guidance faculty member. But unfortunately, we understand that it's obviously wrong, al pi halacha. Now we'll get into that. So we'll start with the pasuk in Mishpatim. V'shocha lo sikach. Done. Don't take a bribe. That's it. Gone. We can close. Everyone's shear's over. Let's go home. Don't take a bribe.
Well, wasn't this talking specifically about judges?
You will see, yes, but we'll find other extensions of this concept of what bribery would be. More in Ksubas, we'll get to in a minute. By definition, bribery blinds a person, v'salik divrei tzadikim, and causes the person's judgment to become skewed. It's not a question of, oh, I'll just take a bribe and I'll remain impartial. This is like a law of gravity. It's a law in psychology. If you take a bribe, you can no longer be biased. Impartial. You will be biased. It says that. Don't take it. Key, because shochad yaver pikhim. It's going to prevent you from being honest. So, let's, is it not in here? Oh, maybe it's okay. Well, let's start with it. The Gemara in Ksubis gives a few definitions. It's only partially on the source sheets, but I'll tell you outside. There's a Gemara that goes through Ksubis and talks about certain Amorayim who received favors from people, and therefore, because they received favors for them, they would refuse to be the dayan on their case. Shmuel, I think Maymar. One of them was helped across a river. And the guy there, he says, "What? Who are you?" He says, I'm the ferryman. He says, "Why are you here?" He says, "Because I have a court case." He says, "Well, I'm disqualified now because you did me a favor. You helped me cross the street. You helped me cross the river." Another one, there was like a spit or something on the ground, and they put a cloth to cover it. And he asks, "What are you doing here?" He says, "Oh, I'm here for a basis. Can't you cover the... You covered, like, imagine like a puddle. Imagine like dirt in the ground. You covered up with something so the guys didn't walk on it. You did me a favor, I'm a..." Right? A third one, there was like some sort of bird or something was on his shoulder, and he like shooed it away off of him. Another Gemara, the same Gemara has a case where there was somebody who actually worked for him, and normally he used to bring him his fruit that he produced from the field on Friday. But that week, he came on Thursday. He brought him the fruit one day earlier. So he says, "Why are you here a day early? You usually come on Friday." He says, "No, I'm here because we know Beis Din meets on Mondays and Thursdays. I'm here because I have a Beis Din. I have a..." Okay. So he brought him his own food. It was his coming to him anyway. But he did him a favor. He brought it one day earlier than normally came. He says, "I'm disqualified." So I think it's Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda, if I remember correctly. So he's sitting there listening. He sat. He went into the court case, and as he's sitting there on sidelines, he's listening to his worker, his aris, arguing his case. And he's sitting there in subconscious, hey, saying, "No, you should tighten this. It'd be a better argument. You should argue this way. It'd be better for them." And he stopped himself. He wasn't speaking anything out loud. He says, "Oh my goodness, look, I was getting something that was really mine anyway. It wasn't really a bribe, but just I got a favor because it came to me a day earlier. And I find myself automatically inclining how to help him argue his case better in the court. So kal v'chomer if I would have actually taken a bribe, right? So favors. Now this is meisim b'chol yom in the business world. Kickbacks, right? And in the pharmaceutical companies, when they want to bring in a product, they take the med students out to fancy dinners in Manhattan. This is meisim b'chol yom. This happens all the time in the business world. And people get the... Well, it's not a bribe, it's a favor.
They do it with the doctors now.
Yeah.
They bring lunches for meetings.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have the meetings.
Yeah, but they it's more than that. Then they want, because they're pushing their particular product.
They're explaining how it works.
All right, but I'll bring you lunch in the meantime. Right, all right.
I'm happy with them because we supply a lot of the lunches.
Oh, see. You know,
but they actually cut down their budgets and whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're trying to change it around again also. But,
you know. Yep.
In fact, the interesting part is that if they go over the budget amount, then it's not the pharmaceutical company or the rep that actually gets fined, it's the doctor that gets fined.
Or the doctor gets fined.
The doctor.
Interesting.
The doctor is the one who actually gets penalized if they go over the budget.
Interesting. Well, okay, see, it happens. So that there's another part of the Gemara in Ksubas here. It's the same daf, it's Kufhei. Well, I said he was outside, but here it says, Shochad lo sikach ma tamalomar. What's it mean? If you can't tell you not to get the innocent guy guilty, not to make the guilty guy innocent, don't pervert judgment. Even to make the innocent person innocent. I mean, you're not doing anything wrong. You're going to make the case correctly. To make the guy guilty who's really guilty. So you can't even take a bribe to do the right thing. You mean, what do you mean? What did I do wrong? I was going to call the guy innocent anyway. And I just took a bribe to do it. No, not allowed. Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Chaf Gimel, Halacha Aleph and Beis, Losika Shochet Ein Sarach, Lema La'ovas Esadin, Elafila Zakos Esazakai. The Rambam paskins this Gemara, La Halacha, L'chayv Esachayv, Osir, V'over Belo Sase. You get a lav for doing that. Kol Dayin Shiyoshev Gadol, Malos Okedei, L'harbo Schar, the Chazon of Sofrov, Harehu Bechlal, Ritiyim achri abetza. They've taken a bribe. V'lo shochad mam bilvad el afilu shochad devarim. That's the whole point. Even words can be a bribe. So when you talk about shochalo sikach, not taking a bribe, even to compliments, even this is why we know in halacha that a korov or a is posel, right? That means a relative is not allowed to be a judge for you. I can't judge one of my relatives' cases. I can't be witnesses with on behalf of that because you're no gabe dover. You're not going to be objective. And the beauty of this really is the halacha demands the person gets a fair trial. The role of equality in halacha is so important, right? Sefer Achinuch and pay Zion. Shlo yikach hadayin shochad mibali hadin. So I forget who someone said that. Like, wasn't the prohibition? You, Avi, you said that? There was on a judge.
Yeah.
For the part where I was talking about a dayin. Afilu din dinemis. Shnema b'shoch lo sikach. V'nichpal halav b'torah b'zeh. Ayin mokom acher. V'chein omer b'sifri. Lo sikach shochad afilu zako zaka l'chayev chayev midinei mitzvos. Hamitzvos mash omer chazal. She'anoysein amakabel oivrim b'lav. Both the giver and the receiver is Hanaisein, the one who gives it mishum lifneiver lo sitein michshol. The one who's giving the bribe is putting a stumbling block in front of them. So it is a halacha by a dayan, but it applies to all of us. You know, it's even in a al pi drush, we're always judging people. We're always forming judgments of people in the courtrooms of our mind. What do we think about a person? And the bribes and the favors come to distort that reality. Just like a person very, very, very rarely sees anything wrong with themselves. It's just how it is. We always self-correct. We always justify. We have a tirutz for everything we ever do wrong. We're mole tirutzim. Mole tirutzim for everything we do wrong. So if a person who is a bribe, shochad, says the Gemara, shehu echad. Shochad, you bribe, shehu echad, you become at one with that person. So just like I never see anything wrong with myself, I never see anything wrong with Yenim. I never see anything wrong with him because we're the same. I took a bribe and now I've become attached to that person. So now to get a little bit of what are the ethics, what are the halachas about using protectia? Right, you have context. Now again, this happens all the time. Person for a job, for a position. So is protectia wrong in secular law?
What does that mean exactly?
Protectia means using contacts to get ahead. Two people are applying for a job as a stockbroker, and I know because I went to it's my roommate's my college roommate's friend is the one who's in charge of the company. So I give him a call and say, you know what? Maybe you can give a little help to my friend who's
real. Is it who you know, not what you know?
Is what?
It's who you know, not what you know.
Who you know, right? So let's say it's what you know. You have two equal candidates, but one of them has connections, right? You know, many universities have networking events all the time to try to promote these certain things, right? Lots of times, college admissions will they'll take them out to dinner. They have to. It's all about forming a relationship, which is true. It's much as it is about the relationship. I'll tell you even there. Rabbi Yudin told me something in the very beginning. Rabbi Yudin told me, he says, Balabatim will do more for the rabbi than they will for the Shulchan Aruch. You follow what he meant? You come along, you tell somebody that the Shulchan Aruch prohibits this. Okay. The rabbi comes along and says, look, you know what, this really isn't right. Oh, the rabbi said not to do it. So they'll listen to the rabbi, but if you have a relationship, you know, 80-90% of the job is the relationship. But you just told me what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Okay, maybe yes, maybe no. But so protectia means using these things. So Rav Shlomo Aviner, right? Well, we said, does that mean that from secular law, which is very real, lies of halacha, dini de machusa dina, is really all okay? And perhaps the state of Israel should allow it, which it doesn't. Strikingly, one is leading Israeli rabbi, Rabbi Shlomo Aviner, seems to think otherwise. He writes about the pervasive use of protectia. The following is excerpted from a longer piece written by Rav Aviner. So he says, when are you allowed to use the protectia? He says that this is Avarak Muskar Israel Dayan Lakabo Tova Meachad Velo Abale Ha Pekidim Acherim. So he writes it's based upon a pasuk that you're not supposed to do this. It's part of a larger piece. Let me go one more thing to this. This is from Rav Steinman. Ronlev Steinman, that's all. Ze lo mase hagun. This is not a proper way to act. Lahadif adam al mishnehu b'shel protectia. Kach omer hagoin Rav Ronlev Steinman, that's all. If you have a translation underneath, it's not a decent act. It's for one person, not because it protects you. Yeah, I'll read the English underneath because it makes sense just to read the Hebrew and translate underneath. Someone from Steinman's circle was accepted to a position. However, after a few hours, the management informed him that the job had been given to someone else. And when he clarified he was formed, the position had been given to someone else due to closeness and contacts. Protects you. The same person asked the Gaon why the matter happened to him. And he answered, the whole concept of protectia, right, of people using contacts and influence and connections, was done by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to strengthen us in the study of faith and security, emuna and bitachon, so we don't think that we're making decisions in this world, but it's all up to Him. Don't say, don't think I did this. At the end of the day, you could do all the things. It's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not right to use protection, but a person shouldn't think that I'm going to be controlled. At the end of the day, every single event that happens to a person, the spouse that they marry, the job that they have, the home that they own, the children, every single thing comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, He gives the people on the executive seat the power and examines them to behave honestly and gives the job to those who deserve it, or behave dishonestly as is based on connections and acquaintance. Protexia is not something proper at all, concluded Rav Steinman. Wow. Right? So, question?
There's also a concept of helping fellow Jews. If you have two people who are coming to you for a job,
mm-hmm.
one is Jewish and needs a job otherwise,
yep.
Are they
both equally two different electricians? They're both equally qualified. Of course, you have to give the yid.
I suppose the other one's a little more qualified.
Right, okay. A little more. It's not a significant difference.
But if it's not significant, you should still give it to him. If it's significant, then okay, there is a limit. There is a limit to it. Even they talk about this in terms of stores. You have a Jewish-owned store and a non-Jewish-owned store, and the prices are similar, but not exact. So if it's similar, of course. And if it's a little bit different, okay. But if it's a significant difference, you're not here to support. It has to be fair.
So consult your Rav on what's a significant difference.
We gave a shir on this. We gave a Pirkei Avos shir on this one time. Someone asked, if you're allowed. It's not for now. I don't get too far off topic. Someone asked if it makes a difference mentioning. You know, you're in a store and you see the tuna fish is for it's $20 a pound. And they say, oh, but I saw in the other store it's only $15 a pound. So if you're allowed to mention it, is the difference between outside the store versus inside the store? So that was one of the topics we were discussing. So when you are. Okay, let's continue. See how much. Okay, good. Gemara in Sanhedrin, Lam Bezim and Bez. Sedek, Sedek Tirdof. Again, talking about a Bezdin. Echadin ve'echad Pshora. So Pshora means a compromise. Right? Gemara is in the beginning of Sanhedrin. Hey, Vav Zion, just the idea of not making compromises in Halacha. Ketzad, excuse me. Shtei Sefinos, two boats. Ovros Benahar, Upogazeh Bezeh. So there's like a channel to pass, but only one boat can get through at a time. Im Over Shtehim, they both go through Shtehin Tovos, right? Not going to work. Bezeh Acher Zeh, Shtehin Ovros. But then if you do one after, they'll both be able to get through. Two camels who are on a steep mountain road and only one can go at a time. If they both go at the same time, they're going to fall. It's not wide enough for both of them. If one goes after the other, they'll both be able to walk there. So who gets, this is our discussion about preferential treatment. Who gets to go first, right? Two boats to pass, two camels to that. Kate said, Teuna v'she'ena teuna. If one has cargo and one doesn't have cargo, tidche she'ena teuna mipnei teuna. So then the one who's not carrying anything gets pushed aside, and the one who has cargo, because it's more of a pressing need, they should go first. So if one boat is empty or one camel is empty, they have to wait and let the other one go in front of them. Krova she'ena krova, if one's destination is close, the other's not so close, tidche krova mipnei she'ena krova. The one who has to go a farther distance, they should get to go first because they have a longer time to do. Hare shtein krovos v'shtehin rechokos. But, if they're exactly equal, there's no mila one over the other, they're exactly the same, hit up shor b'nehim v'malos sachar ze leze. So they let one go first, but the other one has to pay for whatever loss. They split the loss in half. So that would mean like this. Give you a simple case. Let's say if you let the other guy go in front of you, they're both equal, there's going to be a $100 loss. You're going to lose $100 by letting him go first. So, but if the other guy's first, he's going to lose $100. So then one gets to go first, and they split the $50. Gives the $50 up, because at the end of the day, it's equal. So that's what the one says. There's a Me'iri. The Me'iri on this Gemara is important. Yesh Devarim She'ein Midas Hadin Sheletes Behem V'Atem Tzorich Lachzor Behem Acher Ma'ashiroi Yoyseh L'Hachriya Esal Echod Lama She'ein Midas Hadin Mechavato Derech Pshor Amida V'Umida Me'ula V'Hu She'omer Kosu V'Echod. Okay, Omer B'Tzedek Tishpot Amisecha V'Kosu V'Echod Omer B'Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof She'ein Te'unos. Here it is. Oh, Eina Te'unos Pshor B'Nehem B'Malot Tzachar Zalzeh V'Chein Kol B'Yotze Zeh Kol She'onu Roim She'yochel Lispol Ha'ikuv b'yoyser, anybody who can wait longer, yidche b'nei chavero, he should wait. If he could wait longer, he should. V'chein bari mipnei chole. If one person is healthy and the other person is sick, then the healthy person should wait and let the sick person go first. V'chelko b'yotzeve im ha'kol shava makdim lam koidim. But if everything's the same, so then whoever got there first goes first. So this Me'iri is used when they start talking about organ transplants. If you have somebody who needs the organ transplant and they're lower down on the waiting list, I don't know if I'm correctly, higher down, lower down, whatever it means, they have to wait longer, yeah, to get to that. So the Me'iri says, well, if a person could wait, they should wait, right? It's the fastest. So if people have more of a... I just don't know how hospitals work in terms of this, but I know there is, depending on the level of sickness, the person has a certain level of status, right? As to how they are, and if things are taking a turn for the worse, and they get pushed up in line is to precedence. So then, okay, we understand that this Me'iri, right? If some person's a bari and one person's a cholas, then the bari should wait. But what about using protexia in this case? What about if somebody has connections? Or famous personalities. So that happens to be Mickey Mantle. Do you know the story with Mickey Mantle? Oh, so it's in here. Let me show you the Mickey Mantle case. Turn to the next page. I'm skipping a little bit. We'll see if we have a chance to come back. While these questions of privilege, opportunity, favors can and do come up in countless aspects of life, whether from getting a seat in a restaurant, right? You know somebody, you know you get the chef's table, getting a job, as we spoke about, and even running for elective office. There's no place where the implications of this are more significant than when it comes to the often long lists waiting for organ donors. This came to a public attention when ailing baseball star Mickey Mantle received a liver transplant at Baylor University Medical Center in Dallas on June 8th, 1995. You can find this, actually. It's online. They have on YouTube. They have speeches about him. His liver had been severely damaged by alcohol-induced cirrhosis, as well as hepatitis C. So actually Mickey Mantle speaks, and it's a very somber talk. He says, I abused my body. And they show pictures of him holding with a glass of alcohol in his hand. And he said, I mistreated my body. So that's a big musser in itself. He's telling the little kids, you know, how many kids look up to Mickey Mantle, right? To be ball player, an athlete. But when these athletes behave in ways that are harmful to themselves, so it's very hard for a child to be able to make that chiluk, to separate between the ball player and the lifestyle. Yeah. Rabbi Yudin once gave a drasha where he said, be very careful about which posters you hang up in your bedroom. Right? So I had a friend, Zachrusa Ori Pilichowski. He told me after he heard that drasha, he grew up in Fairlawn. He said, after he heard that drasha, he went down and took down, I guess it was Michael Jordan or whoever it was, he took down every single... Rabbi Yudin apparently said, I don't want to have to look at the posters hanging up on wall and think guilty or innocent. Okay? Yeah, prior to the operation, doctors discovered he had an inoperable type of liver cancer. In July, he recovered enough to deliver a press conference at Baylor, and he noted that many fans had looked to him as a role model. "This is a role model. Don't be like me," a frail Mantle said. He also established the Mickey Mantle Foundation to raise awareness for organ donations. Mantle returned to the hospital shortly thereafter, was found that his cancer had spread throughout his body. Mantle's popularity led to controversy concerning the conditions of his liver transplant. Some felt that his fame had permitted him to receive a donor liver in just one day, bypassing other patients who had been waiting much longer. Mantle's doctors insisted that the decision was based solely on medical criteria, but acknowledged that the very short wait time created the appearance of favoritism. Okay, so meaning they're saying it really wasn't, which is what the Meiri said, right? The Meiri said that if you're a chola, then you take precedence over a bari. It could be someone else is also a chola, but even in halacha, we have different levels of sickness, right? In Hilchos Shabbos, you have mechush ba'alma. You have a person who's got a headache, it feels weak. You have a cholish ein bo sakana, cholish yesh bo sakana, you have pikuch nefesh. You have different levels of that. So in the medical system as well, there's different levels of sickness. Right? Everyone should be healthy, but there are different levels of that. And then they say that it takes precedence. I realize now, I guess, when I formatted this, I guess in the Word doc, it got cut off. Commented. All right. It's going Bav Metzia. The famous case of where there's only enough water for one person and two people are walking in the desert, right? So what do you do in this? All right. I'm going to skip to where it got... I apologize. I don't know how that happened. Im shosim shnehem mason. If two people drink from the bottle of water, there's not enough for both of them to share. They're both going to die. Im shosim echad mehem magia liyishuv. And if only one of them drinks, so then he'll be able to get out of the desert and make it back to civilization. He'll live. Darsh ben Patura. So ben Patura says mutav sheishtu shnehem veyamusu. It's, you know what the pshat is? You know what you should do in this case? Both drink and you both die. Va'ayiru echad mehem b'misasa shel chavero. And then you don't have to watch your friend die. Could you imagine how the guilt, the feelings of a survivor, meaning neither one of them was going to live. It wasn't if they share it, they're both going to live. Of course we understand that would be the halacha. Both are going to drink and both are going to live, of course. But I drank it and I left this person to die. So this is Ben Petrus says you both should drink and you both will pass away. However, Ad Shebo Rebbe Akiva V'Limad V'Chai Achicha Imach, your brother should live with you. Chayecha Koidmim L'Chayecha V'Ercho. Your life comes first. Chayecha Koidmim. Your life comes first. So therefore, if you are the owner of the bottle of water, it's yours. You drink it. And unfortunately, it's not a pleasant, it's a very unpleasant situation, but only one person's going to live. That's the halacha. Your life comes first. You do what you need to for your life. So comes along the Chazon Ish. It says something important. Yoradea Simon Samach Tes. V'nir she'ein chaver roshoi ligzol mimenu miyamam. Meimam. He's not allowed to steal. The friend is not allowed to take that physical item away from the one who had it. Even normally, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, you're allowed to use your friend's money to save your life. What does that mean? If someone's attacking you, right? And the only way I can get away with the attack is I pick up the shtender and I throw it at his head and I break his shtender. So I use my friend's money, but I save my life. So of course, you're allowed to do that. By the way, they said that's how the terrible attack in Muncie, they threw a table at him. Mm-hmm. Right? Baruch Hashem. Hocha, in our case, so again, what's the Chazon Ish pointing out? In our case, over Shabbos, the Rav was telling me that the Chazon Ish didn't really speak out the kash and the teretz. You had to know the whole sugi before you even got to the chaz, learning Chazon Ish, because in his mind he already was working out, and it's very direct like this. So hoch in this case kevar huchra hadin the chayecha koidmim v'havi ha'goizel goizel nefesh shel chavero, that you can't take something from them, you can't take his life. What does this mean? So then the chuvasar, I'm not going to read them inside, but the chuvas basically discussed this case of what does it mean to cut in line? Are you physically taking somebody? Did I steal something by taking that place away from someone else? So there's two parts to it, really. Is the person themselves allowed to? And then what about the I guess the administration of a hospital. He goes back and forth. It's hard to read the tshuva conclusively. Seems to be going back and forth. This is from Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein. Chola zokel avor shtel's clear. Needs a kidney transplant. Hatur shel mamtini lech lalos kliya orich maor. It's a long line. He mutal ishtadel l'kadeim es makoma bitur. Can he work to try to get ahead in the line? Be a dia shekum naso bitur targum tigrom. Sorry to the wrong. Tigrom l'dechikas chole acher. Because by definition, when you go up in line, somebody else is losing that spot. So he quotes this chazonish as part of the context. It's unconclusive as to exactly what is the final psak in such a case. It's unclear. Obviously, a shayla would have to be asked in such a literally life-threatening situation. There's other tshuvas as well. I saw a lot on this, but again, it's hard to really find a definitive conclusion on this. But for those areas of the life where we could have a definitive conclusion. So this whole, as we started with the Operation Varsity Blues, the dishonest means to get into it. At the end of the day, Sheker never wins, right? We quote, I think, in Parshas Noach, that the Medrash tells us, it's quoted by the Das Kin Bali Tosfos, that Noach made a teva, and everyone had to come in with, you had a benzug, you had a partner you had to go with. And Sheker couldn't find anybody who was willing to go on the boat, get onto the table with. So they made a shiga, pachta and shikra. Pachta means losing, right? To lose and sheker. So they made a deal. Whatever is acquired by sheker will go to pachta. Whatever is acquired through lying will be lost. It will never have a kiyum. The Yisod HaDavarim is that anything that's ever attained, even if it's a short-term win through Sheker, will not last. By definition, the way Hashem created the world, that's what the Medrash is telling us, that Sheker, that lies and Pachtav and losing go hand in hand. It's a Shidduch. They're married together. If you lie, you will lose. There's no Toelos whatsoever. And we know, a person, it takes a moon, it takes Chizuk, because you see people who cheat, and it seems they're getting ahead, and they got a better job, and they got a better this, and a better that. At the end of the day, it will not have a kiyum. Quoted a story from Busu, whereas there was a man who had ordered expensive luggage for a client, and what happened was the client never followed up to get it. So apparently it was $300,000 of merchandise that he had paid him for at the back, and he bought them, but he couldn't locate him. And then after a while, he couldn't do it, but he made a tremendous profit. He ended up selling, I think, for like $700,000, this fancy luggage or suits, whatever it was. But he wanted to try to find to pay back the almana, because the man had paid for the advance. He owed him $300,000. So the almana wasn't willing to talk to him, because first of all, she had no records of her husband about the thing, and people were claiming all sorts of things that they owed him, even family members. No one was protecting this woman. Everyone was trying to cheat her and to do all sorts of things. So she thought this guy was running a scam business. So he wasn't. He was just an Erlich Yid, and he wanted to give back the money that is. So he tried and tried and tried, and she didn't do it. He finally went back in his records and found a bank account from a transaction from years ago to this wealthy businessman, and he had the account number, and he wired the $300,000 into that account. Okay, just doing the right thing. A month later, I think we told the story in a drusha, right? A month later, the limousines start pulling up, and there's like these very wealthy, dignified, like Arab noblemen that show up at the man's door, and he has no idea what's happening. He says, I want to see this man with my own eyes. And it turns out she was a relative to like the prince of, I forget which Arab country it was. And he said, you're such an honest person. Everybody else was trying to take advantage of her, and we saw what an honest, straightforward person you are. We said, we need somebody to manage our investments here in America, and only a person like you we would trust to do it. But we can't have you. You're going to be entertaining very wealthy, noble people from all around the world. We can't have you in a house like this. So they got him like a mansion. They got him like a new house. They got him up. But the Rebusu quote is, it's a Maisa Shahaya. I had all the names and everything when I told it over originally. But that's the Yisod. the Yisod is that Shekir, bribery, protects you, as Rav Steinman says, never, it's not right. It's a davish in hogun, but being honest and being ehrlich, that's what the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants from us, and that's the proper way to act in all situations. Okay. Shkoyach, everybody. Have a good day.